I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. Earlier this week, Texas Senator Ted Cruz became the first Republican candidate to announce his run for the White House in 2016, while more than a dozen other Republicans are testing the waters for potential campaigns. The Democratic field is far more narrow. Hillary Clinton is considered the frontrunner, but she's been knocked off her pedestal a bit. Meanwhile, former Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley has been on the ground in Iowa and New Hampshire, reaching out to voters with a populist message. In this hour, a look at O'Malley's presidential ambitions and his prospects with political scientists Melissa Deckman and John Bullock, and Annie Linsky, national political correspondent for the Boston Globe. Midday Politics, coming up after the news from NPR. And welcome back to Midday, everyone. Dan Rodericks here. Thanks again for joining us and making Midday part of your day. As usual, a two-hour show. In the second hour of our show today, a story of espionage and sabotage from Baltimore 100 years ago during World War I. Paul Hilken was an American citizen and a prominent Baltimore businessman, but he had a secret life in Germany's most effective sabotage cell in the United States. He helped German agents carry out attacks on munitions, on factories, depots, and ships, including a massive explosion at a place on the New Jersey waterfront known as Black Tom. Military historian Dwight Messimer has a book out called The Baltimore Sabotage Cell, published by the Naval Institute Press in Annapolis. Dwight Messimer will be joining us for the second hour of our show today to talk about Paul Hilken and the Baltimore Sabotage Cell. Really, really interesting story. Midday Politics in this hour. On Monday, Republican Senator Ted Cruz of Texas announced that he will run for the presidency in 2016. Ted Cruz is the first major Republican candidate to declare his intentions. U.S. News & World Report found that he raised about $1 million within 24 hours of announcing his candidacy on Twitter. Ted Cruz, a first-term senator, a member of the Tea Party, son of a Cuban immigrant father, promised in his announcement speech at Liberty University that he would repeal the Affordable Care Act, that he would abolish the Internal Revenue Service, defend the sanctity of human life, and, quote, uphold the sacrament of marriage, also institute a simple flat tax. That's what we got from Ted Cruz this week. Other Republicans are expected to throw their hats in the ring. We're looking at Florida Governor Jeb Bush, Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker, former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee is still out there, and the U.S. Senator Rand Paul. Also, not to forget, the former Johns Hopkins Hospital neurosurgeon, pediatric neurosurgeon, Ben Carson, who also made some news this week with an interview he gave to GQ magazine and some statements he made about President Obama. On the Democratic side, the Washington Journal, the New York Times, and the National Journal, among others, are predicting that Hillary Clinton will finally announce that she's running for president early next month. Early in April. The question is, if not Hillary, who? Hillary Clinton has already been knocked off her pedestal a bit with criticism over her use of a personal email account and server while she was Secretary of State, and with acceptance of hundreds of thousands of dollars in speaking fees from many different interests, including Wall Street companies. And former Governor Martin O'Malley is out there and making some news the last couple of weeks, making headlines. He traveled to Iowa and New Hampshire, spoke to potential voters about capping Wall Street bonuses, reinstating the Glass-Steagall financial regulation law, protecting the middle class. He's been focused on the economy, creating jobs. Now, a CNN poll shows Martin O'Malley is only, well, sort of a blip in voters' minds still, well behind Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden and Elizabeth Warren. So a lot to talk about here, including, does O'Malley actually have a chance at all? What are his prospects? It's interesting to speculate about this. Welcome to Midday Politics, then. I want to welcome to our show today John Bullock, for the first time, Assistant Professor of Political Science at Towson University, who's joining us here in Studio A. John, nice to meet you. Have you on the show.
Hey, great to be here.
And Melissa Deckman is back, Chair of the Political Science Department at Washington College and Midday contributor on politics. Nice to see you again, Melissa.
It's great to be back, Dan. Thank you.
And I'm happy to connect with Annie Linsky, too, who used to work at the Baltimore Sun and Bloomberg News, now national political reporter for the Boston Globe. Annie, nice to have you on the show.
Hi, great to be on.
You know, I hardly know where to begin here. Why don't we just jump in on O'Malley here, because this is a Baltimore, a Maryland radio station, and there's been a lot of talk about him the last couple of weeks. I notice more and more press for O'Malley just in the last 10 days or so. So why don't we just start here and talk about what's been going on. Annie, want to give us a little bit of what you see happening with the O'Malley campaign in the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, sure. Well, it's great to be here and talking about Martin O'Malley. He has been, not perhaps, but absolutely the most active of the on the Democratic side of potential candidates. He, of course, has not said whether he's going to run or not, but he has been to Iowa and New Hampshire at least a dozen times, and also South Carolina. So, you know, and nobody else has been doing that. And so I think that is giving him some reserve of goodwill with folks who are in these states and who are used to seeing the candidates come in early and come often and get to talk to them. And you know, people in Iowa, people in New Hampshire are kind of looking a little jealously at their, you know, their Republican friends who are having, you know, attention lavished on them from the Republican side. But, you know, Hillary Clinton has not been to Iowa once this year. The last time she was there was at the Harkin Steak Fry in the summer, and she hasn't been to New Hampshire at all. So I think O'Malley is being pretty smart to spend some time there and do what the activists expect, which is to have some face time with him.
And Melissa and John O'Malley, I've been watching him like everybody else who's following politics in the presidential campaign this early, a kind of a populist message. We talked about it last week, about his statement that he thinks the Glass-Steagall Act should be reinstated. That was a law that went in, Congress passed during or in the aftermath of the Great Depression that separated commercial from investment banking, put up that wall. That wall came down. We had a big financial mess. O'Malley points this out, sort of appropriating a populist message from Elizabeth Warren, who is saying she's not going to run for president. So would you want to comment on that? It's an interesting maneuver by O'Malley, an interesting theme he's embraced.
I think that for any Democrat to really have a good chance to defeat Hillary Clinton, who is the presumed frontrunner, you're going to have to bring something that's different than what Hillary Clinton has to offer. She's viewed as a centrist. Progressives in the party are not very happy with Hillary Clinton, and so they're yearning for someone to be more populist, to actually talk about making reforms to address things like income inequality or climate change. Many of them, of course, want Elizabeth Warren to run. She's very popular with the base of the party. Elizabeth Warren has not indicated that she's going to do so. And so Martin O'Malley is sort of trying to take over that role within the party. Whether he'll be successful right now, it's still debatable, but I think that's the angle that he's playing right now.
John?
I agree, and it only bolsters what his message will already be. So if you even take a look at his website, he touts what he did in Maryland and Baltimore City. And if you look at, you know, what was passed in Maryland while he was governor, things like the minimum wage increase and same-sex marriage, and he also touts the improvements in the environment. So if he's able to put some of these banking reforms on top of that, that would definitely bolster his position. And getting out there early is so important for him, just in terms of boosting that name recognition in polling.
Let me quote the Daily Iowan. Did you see this?
I did.
Did you see this quote? This is a student newspaper, but it's a very good student newspaper.
It's a student newspaper. Let's just
okay.
Should we stop there?
Yeah. Emphasize that.
Love my students. But, yeah.
However, I mean, it's got 19,000 circulation in a state of what, 22,000 people? I mean, this is a well-regarded student newspaper, but I just they got to look at O'Malley. And I'm going to quote it here because some people around Baltimore, Maryland might be interested in what people out in Iowa say about him. He packs the executive leadership often craved by presidential voters. 8 years at the helm of Maryland government and before that as mayor of Baltimore, where supporters say he reversed the eastern industrial city's decline. O'Malley has the ability to captivate the nation and rise from a relatively unknown to a political juggernaut, as John F. Kennedy did in the 1960s. More than 50 interviews with the Daily Iowan show. So they did a little, you know, sort of a straw poll there. O'Malley has slowly but surely chipped away at Hillary Clinton's political gravitational pull, climbing from an inadequate public speaker to prime presidential product should he announce a Democratic run. Wow.
I think that's quite optimistic and maybe a little premature. But I think it speaks to the fact that, you know, he's getting a lot of national attention right now because the media loves the story. What's really boring is Hillary Clinton's going to win the nomination. Let's have the same story for months and months on end. They'd rather have a fight. Obama-Clinton campaign rivalry in 2008 was great politics. It was great fun for the media. So they're angling for someone, for Hillary Clinton to have some sort of opponent. And so right now, the only other person who's really being serious about it, as Annie pointed out, is Martin O'Malley. He's made multiple visits to Iowa and to New Hampshire. He wrote an op-ed in the Des Moines Register, which was really geared at the base of the Democratic Party, appropriating a lot of those more populist economic policies. And so he's really the only serious alternative at this point. And so I think what we're going to see over the next couple of months are probably some profiles in the New York Times and some of the national newspapers. Mm-hmm. And so we'll have to see where it goes. I mean, anything's possible, but at this point, he's still, I think, a long shot.
For John and then Annie, how much do you think, I said Hillary Clinton's been sort of knocked, I wouldn't say she's been knocked off her pedestal. I think the pedestal wobbled a little bit with the story about her email. And Annie, this is interesting. This story you had about a week or so ago on her speaking engagements, being out there on the speech circuit and taking lots of money still, apparently undeterred by criticism of this.
Yeah, I mean, Democrats really scratch their head about Hillary Clinton's continued taking of doing these paid speeches. And I wrote a story because she was doing a paid speech to a summer camp association, and it wasn't even, you know, a national summer camp association. It was like the New York and New Jersey summer camp association, and the group got a $2 million budget, and her speaking fee would represent, you know, 10% of their annual budget. And you know, you talk to Democrats here in D.C. about this, and, you know, even her strongest supporters are just wondering why she would just continue to do these speeches, you know, coming right up into when her announcement is expected, which is really early April.
Mm-hmm.
Has it really hurt her? I mean, I guess it hasn't. So she continues to do it.
Yeah, there's that. I mean, she has taken fees from some Wall Street companies, mm-hmm. too, as well. Considered cozier with Wall Street than certainly Elizabeth Warren. So O'Malley is trying to grab some of that, too, to put some distance between him and Clinton. So let me ask John Bullock, the email, I don't even know if I want to call this a scandal. It was a front page story in the New York Times. And then within a couple of days, it was being qualified. She made a statement about it, and we found out that other office holders around the country, governors, not secretaries of state, but governors, have had, you know, separate email accounts or used their private email accounts. So, did you see any damage from that?
You know, some would say it's much ado about nothing, but on the other hand, we talked about this earlier, that some look at it as a self-inflicted wound. It's something you didn't have to necessarily do. But the critiques and criticisms of Hillary Clinton tend to be fairly consistent. And so whether it was this, it would be something else, and they tend not to stick. And so I think in her mind, and in the campaign's mind, the goal would be for people to have a short memory, let these things sort of blow over. By the time the announcement comes, this would be fine. But these critiques, these wounds, they kind of do open up the ground for somebody like Martin O'Malley, who's been able to take advantage of that, mm-hmm. Again, showing that, well, she may be vulnerable in some of those areas. But I think there may be something to be said about maybe easing back on some of these speeches, not giving people so much material to use as fodder against
right,
her.
Right, right. Maybe next time Goldman Sachs calls, don't show up for a $250,000 fee. Melissa?
I would say what's interesting, too, about this quote-unquote scandal with the email is that I looked at some national public opinion poll right before we came on the air, and when Hillary Clinton left office as Secretary of State, she was broadly popular. About almost two-thirds of Americans approved of the job she was doing. Now it's almost 50-50 again. So you almost have half of the American public saying they're not happy with Hillary Clinton. Hmm. And I think what this is, it kind of reminds a lot of people about the Clintons in general. The Clintons seem to have a lack of judgment. They tend to be tone-deaf about some of the moves that they pull, whether it's speaking speaking and going doing speaking engagements, getting lots of money, or whether it's having your own private server. But there's a sense that there's a lack of hubris, I guess, or this kind of notion that they're above the law.
A set of rules for the Clintons and
exactly.
rules for everybody else. I saw that repeated criticism or point made after the email stuff came
out.
We'll have to take a break here. Annie Linsky, stay on the line with us, would you please? It's nice to be in touch with Annie Linsky again, who used to work with me at the Baltimore Sun. She moved on to Bloomberg News, and now with the Boston Globe as national political correspondent. John Bullock is with us here from Towson University, and Melissa Deckman back from Washington College. We'll continue our conversation in a moment. You can join us at 410-662-8780. Are you surprised by some of the things you're hearing stated about Martin O'Malley? Do you think he has any chance at all? Are you fully in the camp of Hillary Clinton if you're a Democratic voter? Too early? Would you like to speculate as we do here? I know we're a year away from, more than a year away from the primary that'll be held in Maryland and several other states in early April of next year. And Melissa Deckman said what?
596 days until the November general election.
Until the general election. But still, it's fun to speculate. It's midday politics. Midday Politics with Melissa Deckman from Washington College, John Bullock joining us today from Towson University, and Annie Linsky now with the Boston Globe. We're talking national politics. We're looking ahead of the presidential campaign because it's interesting. Martin, of course, the former governor of Maryland has been making some interesting headlines. If you look at the stories about Martin O'Malley that have been in the national press or in big city newspapers or on blog posts and whatnot, I don't know. He's created a buzz because he's not Hillary Clinton. And I guess, Annie, when things when the email stuff came out a couple of weeks ago, people were looking and saying, if this doesn't work out, you know, who's on the bench? And the first one you see, I don't know if the first one you see is Martin O'Malley. The first one voters see is Joe Biden or Elizabeth Warren, it seems like, if you go by polls.
Yeah. Huh? I mean, there is definitely a real thirst among progressives for Elizabeth Warren to jump in. And, you know, she does continue to use the present tense when she says, I am not running for president. So in doing that, she leaves the door a tiny bit open. And there's a lot of debate about, you know, why she does it that way. But, I mean, when you talk about O'Malley, I think Melissa made a great point about the media really wanting there to be a fight on the Democratic side. And the best example of that is the conservative media. You know, if you've been watching the Drudge Report, every single time there's a story about O'Malley out of Iowa, they plaster it on the front page of the Drudge Report, and that, you know, it really drives web traffic in a way that would surprise me, I will say. But once something is linked on the front page of Drudge, it kind of goes off the charts. And, you know, editors do look at that and they think, oh, wow, you know, an O'Malley story is doing very well on our website. So there is this kind of interesting media dynamic to it.
A comment on Facebook from one of our listeners, David, who says, I couldn't vote for Martin O'Malley. I felt as though he abandoned a badly broken Baltimore for his political ambitions. I guess that's the definition of a politician. It's difficult for me to see beyond the heavy hits in my wallet that he created from taxes and fees while governor, done in concert with a horrible economy that was tough enough to manage through without piling on. Of course, there's my shallow likability factor. I found him arrogant, condescending, and snarky. More comments. Welcome here. midday@wypr.org is our email address. Of course, people in the states of governors who run for president usually have a different opinion than people in other states, right? I mean, John?
No, certainly. I mean, again,
familiarity, right?
Familiarity breeds contempt, right? Yeah. I mean, and so in many cases, I mean, you have, you know, 8 years in this case to really judge off of things that happened. And again, there have been some bruised feelings. People in Baltimore who felt that he always had his eye on the governor's mansion and then his eye on the presidency. And so maybe, you know, left some things undone. Again, you know, his running mate and then his handpicked successor, you know, Brown, is not able to pull off that trick. And so that was
in
also
a blue state.
In a 2-1 blue state. And mm-hmm. so really that was in many ways a referendum on Martin O'Malley's leadership over the years, even though we know that once you've had a one-party rule for a couple of years, or at least for two terms, people tend to want to vote in another direction. So close to home, there may be a very different perception than around the country.
And I think
there's
a big
that.
Oh, go ahead, Annie.
Donors, you know, I brought that point up at a few meetings in Washington, and in talking to liberal donors, and this is one of O'Malley's big weaknesses, is he just does not have a lot of money. And I talked to some liberal donors about, look, would you consider, if you're a little lukewarm on Hillary Clinton, would you consider O'Malley? And one of them turned to me and said, oh, Martin O'Malley, wait, that's the guy who turned a blue state red, isn't it? And
wow.
I remember being really, really shocked by that remark, that is what, you know, the donors were remembering.
That is interesting because, you know, when we have the debacle of a rollout of the healthcare exchange in Maryland, a state that, you know, where O'Malley had gone on national TV touting how Maryland was in full embrace of the Affordable Care Act. We were going to roll out our own exchange, and then it bombed, right? He came around for the repair. He rolled up his sleeves, literally, and said, we're going to fix this thing, you know, but he wasn't there, really, when the thing launched. He seemed to have Maryland already in the rearview mirror by then. And then you look at the Brown. I'm glad you brought that up because, I mean, is that his responsibility? In part, I think it was. He didn't seem to be working very hard for Anthony Brown. He wasn't very visible in that campaign.
And I think, too, Martin O'Malley really left office with a mixed record. Certainly there are progressive achievements. John has mentioned them earlier. Same-sex marriage was legalized under Martin O'Malley. Martin O'Malley helped to get the death penalty
abolished
here in the state. But when he left office, a lot of Marylanders felt that they were overtaxed, that he essentially wasn't as committed to the state as they'd liked. So I think that there's lots of negatives in O'Malley's record as well that would come back to haunt him if for some reason he ever were to be the nominee for
right.
the Democratic Party.
Right. And expect to get calls from out-of-town press, Melissa and probably John, and I, because I have already, you know. So tell me about this guy, you know. Hey, is he for real? That's the kind of thing. Of course, Annie doesn't need to call me because she knows him, because she was here at the Baltimore Sun as a reporter and covered him. So we should talk about Republicans a little bit and Ted Cruz getting in. Ben Carson's week in politics, and we'll do that in just a moment. Before I do, Joe Biden. Anybody want to say anything here about Joe Biden? Is he the first one? Is he the Hillary understudy? Is he the first one you see on the bench before you get to O'Malley? Or?
Joe Biden has never really said he's not going to be running for president, but there is this big assumption that he's not really going to do it. And he seems to be very passionate about finishing his term as under the Obama administration and spearheading a lot of initiatives that remain there. But I would be surprised at this point if he ran, mainly because I don't think he has the ability to really raise funds or to assemble an effective presidential campaign at this point.
Hmm. John, any thoughts
and
on
he may be having more fun as vice president than anybody else. I mean, it allows him the freedom to be that guy, but I'm not sure if he really wants to be the number one guy. I mean, he ran for the presidency before, but again, you look at age, look at demographics, and really I don't think it's necessarily going to be his move right there.
Another interesting possible candidate is James Webb, former senator from Virginia, former Navy secretary, Vietnam veteran. Annie, where is he? What has he said? He's an interesting candidate.
I'm so glad that's like the perfect segue and the perfect question to ask, because where is he? And one of our reporters in New Hampshire was pointing out that Jim Webb's first event is scheduled in New Hampshire for June. And that is a lot of time to pass. You know, if you talk about Hillary not being involved or engaged, June is pretty far away, and I think that makes it a little difficult for reporters to take his candidacy, you know, all that seriously.
Yeah,
what
do you make of that? Just some bad advice, or really lukewarm about entering, not really sure what he's doing?
I think the latter. I mean, to be, you just contrast it to what Martin O'Malley is doing, which is going up, looking for every single invitation, responding to every invitation, and like going to, you know, politics and eggs, and you know, every little event that he can.
Politics and eggs. That's for breakfast, right?
Right, yeah, politics and eggs.
But I'm wondering, on paper, James Webb, not a more on paper. I mean, the guy is an impressive fellow, and he's from a state that's, you know, more red than it is blue.
Purple.
It's sort of purplish state. Not a bad place to launch a campaign maybe he's just, his heart isn't in it.
I think that the Jim Webb candidacy seems to be more a creation of the media right now than something that he's actively pursuing. Yeah. I've seen him interviewed several times. He said he's open to it, but he's not really aggressive in pursuing it. He does offer some interesting aspects, though. A lot of people look to Jim Webb as possibly a candidate who could bring back in blue-collar Democrats back into the fold and could really appeal more to the grassroots. He has a fascinating background. He's got serious bona fides on foreign policy. This is something O'Malley is very much lacking in. And I think that will be a big concern for O'Malley to address if he's to go further. And so Webb is really offers some interesting tax ideas and I think talks about income inequality in a way that O'Malley really hasn't done until now. So he's interesting, but he's not really putting forth a serious effort.
That's
at this
what it sounds like.
Right now.
No, I agree. Jim Webb would be a very credible candidate. Mm-hmm. But what may be happening is that he's looking at Hillary Clinton like a lot of other people and said, I don't know if I really want to get in if Hillary Clinton is going to be the heir apparent, is going to be the nominee. Somebody like Martin O'Malley is just, you know, going for it regardless. Mm-hmm. But I think others, because there's some other credible candidates out there who could possibly throw their hat in the ring, but I think are probably sitting back a little bit. And then you also think about sort of the possibility of a game-changing candidate. So in the last election, you had Barack Obama. Again, you look at, the racial factor. You look at now with Hillary Clinton, you think about the gender factor. And so is it going to be the time for another white male in terms of running for president, or do they step back? Or is it the time again for that? So I guess there are a lot of questions there, but I think if he's going to actually be a serious candidate, he'd have to do it sooner than later. But I don't think that's really what he's angling for.
We actually have an official candidate this past week. Senator Ted Cruz, the Republican of Texas, announced on Monday morning that he would run for president next year. It makes him the first Republican candidate to declare himself officially in the race. Today, I am announcing that I am running for president of the United States. It is a time for truth. It is a time for liberty. It is a time to reclaim the Constitution of the United States. And he asked people to imagine a president who would repeal the Affordable Care Act, even though some 14 million people now are benefiting from it, abolish the Internal Revenue Service, establish a simple flat tax, and, quote, defend the sanctity of human life and uphold the sacrament of marriage. It sounds like a speech would be great at a Tea Party convention. What about at a National Republican convention, Melissa?
I think the odds of Cruz winning the nomination are pretty small. I think that he's almost unelectable if he were to win the general election. Some of his views are just really too far to the right. But what Cruz did was deliberately picking Liberty University to be the place where he announced his bid for the presidency. Is he's trying to call out, I think what he's trying to do is really to sort of take hold of the right wing of the party and doing it early. One of the passages in his speech, which to me was more like a revival than a political event, a religious revival, overtly religious, he said something to the effect of, about half of born-again evangelicals aren't voting now. And so he's trying to really call on more conservative evangelicals to come out and to support his candidacy. He's also trying, I think, to send a message to people like Mike Huckabee, who's sort of been lukewarm, other notable evangelicals, to maybe say that, you know, he's really the heir apparent for this part of the Republican Party. So I think he's trying to kind of clear the field on that end of the party. And he's also, of course, calling to task Jeb Bush, who he believes is not really conservative enough. And so it'll be interesting to watch. But at this point, I think he's still a long shot.
God's blessing has been on America from the very beginning of this nation. And I believe God isn't done with America yet. I believe in you. I believe in the power of millions of courageous conservatives rising up to reignite the promise of America. That's the quote from Ted Cruz. Listen, we have to take another break, so why don't we pick up on the Republicans when we get back with John Bullock from Towson University, Melissa Deckman, who was just speaking from Washington College, and on the phone with us, Annie Linsky, national political correspondent of the Boston Globe. You're invited to join us. This is a good time to call if you want to get in on our political discussion in this hour. 410-662-8780. The midday email address for comments that way, midday@wypr.org. Our conversation continues in just a moment, but first, comments on Twitter. It's MiddayWYPR, or just my name, Dan Rodericks, on Twitter. Either one will get you here. Your comments. Andrew says, I still love when Ted Cruz addresses crowds. He He talks about what will benefit conservatives and not the U.S. as a whole. Also, Andrew wanted to know on the question of Martin O'Malley, is he just running with the hopes of obtaining a cabinet position or maybe being Hillary Clinton's vice presidential running mate? Annie Linsky, you want to take that one?
Yeah, that's such a good question. It's something that reporters really ask ourselves about a lot. And, you know, I'll just say there's a lot of joy in thinking about how fun it could be to have a Martin O'Malley vice presidency. It just seems like a kind of fun position. And he talks about how he loves the show Veep. He does. He loves it.
And that's filmed in Baltimore. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Filmed in Baltimore. But I, you know, I think, like, you look at what his, I just think a lot about his, what his path is. I mean, that, you know, why is he doing this? And to be a cabinet secretary, I mean, the best thing probably isn't to be out there criticizing the Clintons. They really don't like to be criticized. They make that very clear. And you know, I think in his mind, he's looking at, like, you know, doing very well, or doing, when I say very well, like, beating expectations in Iowa. Right? I mean, Iowa has not been particularly friendly to the Clintons in the past. Iowa is a place that you could see him doing better than the extraordinarily low expectations that everybody has for him. So let's say he does okay in Iowa and then survives New Hampshire and then is back down in South Carolina, another place where he could do okay. And I think that just gives him this national profile that sets him up in 4 years if Hillary loses. But I don't know. I just don't know that I think a lot about that cabinet position thing, and I just don't know that he this would be the best way.
No, what you make what you say makes sense. I just wonder if it doesn't happen this year. Hillary goes on, becomes the nominee. What does O'Malley do with himself for 4 years? Is he you know, take a job at a, well, he's, I know he's signed on to teach at the Carey Business School in Baltimore of Johns Hopkins University. John Bullock, what does he do? He takes a job in academia or with a law firm? He gives a speech now and then?
You know, I don't think it's the worst thing in terms of him being actually a cabinet secretary. I think Andy's correct in terms of him doing well enough and possibly positioning himself for 2020. But again, he's been an executive, right? And so he already turned down the prospect of running for the U.S. Senate. He doesn't want to be a legislator. Right. So if you want to have some work in the executive branch in terms of being a cabinet secretary, that could be really interesting. If he has something, you know, something somebody mentioned, health and human services,
or
transportation or something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, it could give him a certain profile, show that he's actually done something at the national level, and again, kind of keep him in the mix. But the speaking tour, he could continue doing that, but I mean, that's a long time to do it for about 4 years.
Yeah.
And again, you know, the academia thing, I mean, that's a possibility.
Ronald Reagan did it. Ronald Reagan was governor of California, and then after that, he ran for president in 76 didn't quite make it, and I don't know what he did during those 4 years, but he didn't go away. Still heard a lot about him during those 4 years when Jimmy Carter was president.
And look, if Hillary Clinton does not win this time, and you know, if she is the nominee and she's sort of coronated as a nominee, and Democrats somehow lose with this electoral map, which is overwhelmingly on the face of it in favor of Democrats winning. I think the Democratic Party has a very interesting, you know, time where it will potentially split apart the way we have seen the Republican Party split apart in the aftermath of Obama winning. And you could see, you know, this entire, you know, a sort of a very tumultuous time for the Democratic Party, which would give O'Malley a place where he could, you know, be showing some leadership. And there will be a lot of change should she be the nominee and then lose.
410-662-8780 is our phone number here for Midday if you want to get in on our political talk here. Mike in Baltimore had a question, though, about Ted Cruz that I think has come up quite a bit this week. So, Mike, go ahead and ask that question.
Oh, I haven't heard it come up, but the question is, wasn't he born in Canada? Where are the Berthas and Donald Trump?
Yeah, let's go over this a little bit. So Ted Cruz has dual citizenship, is that right?
I think so. I know that because I think he I'd read an article saying that if needed, he would renounce his Canadian citizenship. He was born in Canada. His parents met in Texas. I think they split up. His mother moved to Canada in Calgary, I believe. And then his parents ultimately got back together and moved back to Texas. So he was really raised in Texas. But, you know, I'm not a constitutional scholar, but from what I've read, most sort of court decisions and other interpretations of law would basically enable him to run for president because his mother is a U.S. citizen.
His mother is a citizen. Is that right?
Yeah, just like President Obama's mother is a U.S. citizen, and he actually has a birth certificate in Hawaii. But what's also interesting about Ted Cruz is all
that's a foreign country, Hawaii.
But all things he's railed against, I mean, even like the Affordable Care Act that now apparently he's taken advantage of. I mean, so you rail against things, but then they may apply to you.
Oh, that was funny. That was rich. Ted Cruz and other members of Congress, right, are actually getting their health insurance through the federal website, is that it?
Indeed.
through the ACA, and now he's talking about repealing it. I just don't understand how you get any Republicans get any traction out of still beating up on the Affordable Care Act. In fact, Annie, wouldn't you say that when we talk about the mainstream of the party, that issue is kind of fading as an issue for the mainstream of the Republican Party?
Well, it's hard to say because it was an enormous driver in 2014. The Koch brothers, the group that they started, AFP, Americans for Prosperity, put in millions and millions of dollars for ads that beat up on Obamacare, and then Republicans did extremely well in 2014, and I just can't believe the lesson that Republicans would learn from this is, hey, let's back away from it. I mean, the bottom line is Republicans went in so hard on that, and the yield was fantastic from their perspective. So I don't know.
Annie, it was the yield was fantastic in those congressional districts that were already pretty conservative, right? Wouldn't you say?
Well, because I think in every point along the way, except for New Hampshire, Republicans won. So. It was a very good year for Republicans, and I think any time it was close, the bar went the ball went to the Republicans.
Republicans. I'm with you on that. What happened in 2014? I just think with the numbers, the number of people who have signed up for this for health insurance through this act now, I think that might have been their last blow. 2014. I don't know that it works again, but. I think
nationally, it's not really an issue that is motivating a lot of Americans more generally. It still excites the base, but there are elements of Obamacare that are broadly popular by the American public. To say, for example, that we're going to not allow young Americans to remain on their parents' policy until they're 26 any longer, that will of course not fly. But there's lots of other elements that people now are getting experience with now that the portals are actually working effectively. More Americans now have health insurance, and in fact, there's been a lot of success with Obamacare. I think many Democrats are frustrated with the president for not talking more about some of the successes with it in terms of the reduction in the cost of health care. They're actually going down. So there's actually been a lot of good things with it. And I think as more Americans get familiar with it, they're less hesitant to want to repeal.
For Melissa and then to John and Annie on this, if Ted Cruz is unelectable nationally as a presidential candidate, who is on the Republican side do you think is electable?
I would say Jeb Bush has a very good chance, although the thought of a Bush-Clinton sort of another campaign in 2016 is talk about bringing back the future. But
when you look at the Republicans, the potential candidates here.
But I think that Jeb Bush has executive experience. He's got foreign policy credentials through his link to the Bush administration. And I think that he's been willing to buck extreme elements within his party. So the question for Jeb Bush is, can he make it through the primary process? So Jeb Bush, for example, is still dedicated to Common Core and education reform. He's moderate on immigration policy. These are things that I think would serve him well in a general election. But again, the question is that palatable to a lot of primary voters? And so that's really the big question.
John?
I agree with much of what Melissa said. I mean, again, you have somebody like Jeb Bush, who is seen as somebody who's an establishment Republican, someone who's somewhat of a moderate, who can actually get people to donate to his campaign. That's something else that he's, you know, sort of leading in terms of fundraising. But the challenge for the Republicans always is the primary, that people have to run so far to the right in the primary that by the time it gets back to the general election, it's very difficult. So one question is, can he survive the primary? And then if he doesn't get beat up as much in the primary by his other Republican contenders, mm-hmm. can he actually survive the general election?
Does the base support him in a general
right.
election? Annie, and we're expecting Jeb Bush to run. What's your read on that?
Yeah, I was expecting Jeb Bush to run. Mm-hmm. I was not surprised that he decided to do that. I mean, I think the biggest reason was because this is his chance, right? This is his one shot because he's running against a Clinton, and if he doesn't need to worry about the legacy problem this time and any other time, that's really gonna sink him, I think. And it already makes Republicans very uncomfortable. But if you look at a general electorate, if you have Clinton versus Bush, it's the one time that he gets a chance at a free pass at the legacy issue. So, yeah, that didn't surprise me that he's going to run. And I think, you know, he clearly, you know, I was talking to some actually Democratic Oppo research people this week, and they were saying that Jeb Bush is the one that presents the biggest challenge to them in terms of, you know, coming up with those sort of hair-raising quotes that you can always find from like a Scott Walker or from a Ted Cruz that will really scare off the general mm-hmm. General electorate. Mm-hmm. But Jeb isn't saying things like that, and that does make him a more concerning candidate if you're a Democrat.
Yeah, I think so. And what about Scott Walker? We've only got about a minute left here for our conversation, but could he surprise people in this?
Yeah, he's not too well known outside of his state of Wisconsin. He got a lot of Republican conservative support because he fought back an attempt to a recall election
mm-hmm.
Because he made the decision to take on public unions in Wisconsin.
Break public unions.
And so this, of course, was heralded by many people on the right because they believe that unions are too powerful in this country, despite the fact that union membership is dwindling. But nonetheless, but when Scott Walker goes to CPAC a few weeks ago and says, now that I fought off unions, I can fight off ISIS, I think to myself, that is a really extreme and ridiculous thing to say because right. public union workers are teachers and
yeah.
firefighters.
Yeah, fellow
and
Americans.
I think he's actually veering so far to the right that it's not really going to work for him.
Thank you, Melissa. Melissa Deckman, chair of the Political Science Department at Washington College, who joins us from time to time to talk politics on Midday. Thank you, Melissa.
You're welcome.
And John Bullock, it was nice to meet you today. John Bullock, assistant professor of political science at Towson University. Nice to have you on the show.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
And Annie, thanks for your time. Annie Linsky.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, nice to have you on the show with us. Annie Linsky, now a national political reporter for the Boston Globe. Thursday's lunch for Midday provided by Eddie's of Roland Park. We thank them very much for providing lunch for our guests and some of our staff who sneak a sandwich and some salad. Another hour of Midday in just a moment.